Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, Center University of New York. Welcoming you to this June 3rd edition of Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's the York College radio station. Well, it's great to be back with you, and gotta say, I really enjoyed listening to a part of the previous program. Margaret Prescott always has such outstanding programs, and to hear Zahara Simmons, a powerful sister with whom I worked, the National Black Independent Political Party. She's about to publish a book, and I was interviewed for it, so it was just thrilling to hear that. Actually, today's show touches on part of what she talked about, COINTELPRO, but we'll get to that in a minute. But it was just great to hear that. First of all, we thank all of you who contributed to the recent pledge drive. Very much needed, and we appreciate so much your support. Ongoing need, the need is ongoing. Therefore, we continue to ask people to be WBAI buddies, WBAI buddies. A WBAI buddy is simply someone who makes a sustaining contribution by agreeing to give $10 or more a month. That's $120 a year or more. I'm a WBAI buddy. Don't ask people to go where I am not prepared to go. So I'm a WBAI buddy and have been now for quite some time. I'm able to give more than $10, and you may be able to do so as well. But if $10 is what you can give, and certainly there are many, many out there who can do that, it would be deeply, deeply appreciated, because it means that the management is able to determine revenue. And I do know that there is an effort to try to reduce the number of pledge drives, the number of times we have to come and ask you, you know, by way of James Brown, please, please, please. There's an effort to do that. So, but just hang with us, hang with the management. The effort is being made. But that effort does include having as many WBAI buddies as possible. So go to give to WBAI, give to WBAI, and sign up today. And I know that there are literally hundreds of people out there, if not thousands, who could actually do that. And we appreciate so much if you would be so kind as to do that. I'd like to also just mention, unfortunately, a couple of persons who have transitioned. First and foremost, Dr. Niara Sudharsika, one of the great educators of our time. She was president of Lincoln University and just received word from a dear friend of ours, Mel Foote, with the constituency from Africa, for Africa, that she made her transition over the weekend. So I just want to pass out condolences to the family. And then opened up the newspaper today and saw that Leah Chase, I'm going to have some people come on and talk about her as well. She is one of the proprietors of Dookie Chase's restaurant in New Orleans. And I do declare that if you ever were in New Orleans, stopping at Dookie Chase's was a must. And it's like Sylvia's in a way in New York, but it's much larger than that in many regards, because this was like the home of civil rights leaders. Anybody who was anybody stopped at Dookie Chase's. I went there with Reverend Jackson in the 1988 presidential campaign when I became aware of it. I went there. Brock Peters was in the house. All kind of celebrities were there. But such humble people, she and her husband. I mean, this is accessible. They'd come and speak to you, come to your table. And about a year and a half ago, maybe or so, a dear friend of mine in New Orleans, we went by the restaurant on some issue and we were dealing with. And, you know, she invited us back in the kitchen and we chatted with her. And I remember right after Katrina, you know, she was kind enough to come to the Ashe Center. And I did an interview with Mark Morial, president of the Urban League, former mayor of New Orleans. And she came and did an excellent interview. I was then at WWRL and whatnot. So we just want to give a big shout out to our most recent ancestors Dr. Niara Sudharsika and Miss Leah Chase. In the New York Times today, there's an extensive biography about her. She was a remarkable woman. Both of these women, remarkable people. Well, today we are going to deal with a part of what we heard on the last show. Was listening to Zahara Simmons, and she was talking about the movement and how it was disrupted by COINTELPRO. And I said, wow, what a coincidence, because that's one of the topics we want to deal with today. The FBI Black Extremist Assessment, COINTELPRO Part 2 is how I've labeled it, and have two outstanding guests who are standing by to join the conversation. Attorney Ajua Ayotoro is a civil rights, human rights attorney. I'm going to ask her to talk more about herself. I've known her for many, many years, always on the battlefield. And Attorney Barbara Arnwine as well, both very, very active in doing work for many, many years. And again, I know about them a lot, but I'm going to let them talk about themselves. But now I want to welcome them both. Attorney Ajua Ayotoro, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon.
Welcome. And Barbara Arnwine, are you there? Are you igniting some change, Barbara?
You know I am. Yes, I'm here.
Lord, I am so delighted to have these two very, very outstanding freedom fighters on with me today. And I want to just, first of all, and Ajua, thank you so much for presenting this topic. And we weren't able to get it on until now, but it's a very crucial topic. And I wanted to deliver on my promise to have you on. But Ajua, just say a little bit about the work that you've done over the years, a snippet just in terms of, you know, some of the stuff. I know it's hard because you've done so much, but just give us a little snippet of the kind of work that you've been involved with.
First of all, I want to thank you, Ron. You've stuck with your interest and agreement that we'd be on the show, and this is actually a great time because it's a few days before an event. But as you said, I'm Ajua Ayotoro. I've worked for a number of years in the leadership of National Conference of Black Lawyers. I'm now just an active member. I was in the leadership of the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, now just an active member. And I've done quite a few. I've worked with Barbara. We worked on the Women's Conference in Beijing and the follow-ups to that. And so I've just been active. As you pointed out, I'm a warrior. I'm very committed to racial and social justice.
Yeah, and, you know, you kind of ducked away from us a while and went out to Little Rock, Arkansas, and because you were a distinguished professor as well. So
yeah.
I'm just throwing a little extra in there.
Yeah,
you know,
I was a professor. Yeah, I'm retired.
Yeah, and I'd like to share with the audience, too, that you're playing a leading role, actually, in terms of reparations in many, many ways, but also with those families whose descendants of those families who Georgetown University that benefited from their enslavement, you are playing a leading role in trying to get justice for them. So I'm just sharing that with the audience as well. Barbara Arnwine, attorney Barbara Arnwine, whole bunch of stuff in your category as well. But just give us a snippet. I know it's hard, but just give us a sonnet.
Oh, no. I'm just, a warrior who's been out here in the legal sector, you know, fighting for racial justice for years. I was at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law as the national director, and now I head up a small, wonderful, hard-hitting organization called the Transformative Justice Coalition that works on policing reform and works very, very hard on voting rights and African-American women in law, and so many other critical issues affecting our community. And I, you know, teach some and do what I can to help prepare another generation of justice warriors, legal warriors.
Yeah, and both of you are very skilled at doing that as well. And I was just commenting that the previous program, Margaret Prescott, who has such excellent programming here on WBAI, which is syndicated really all across the Pacifica network, actually had on, and I just happened to tune in and hear the voice of someone that you know from the past, and that was Zahara Simmons. you know, from the national, back in the days of the National Black Independent Political Party.
Mm. That's right.
Yes, and she was, well, Lord, have mercy, she was fired up. I was ready to come, I'm ready to join the struggle all over again.
You never left, Ron.
That Zahara was really bringing it. Well, let's get into the topic for today. I talked about COINTELPRO. I added that sort of as a background because you talked about the black extremist assessment. But both of you just talk a bit about COINTELPRO. We throw these terms out, and sometimes I find that even though this is a very knowledgeable audience, there are sometimes people who you throw a term out and they don't even know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to just have each of yours assessment of the COINTEL program as it was originally conceived. And, you know, I know right now there's a lot of debate. I think it's David Garro, if I'm not mistaken, who's coming out with some new revelations, but really are not new revelations in some ways, about Dr. Martin Luther King and how the FBI spied on him and all of those things. But leading with you, Ajahnwa, just talk a bit about COINTELPRO.
Well, COINTELPRO was a program that was built under the leadership of J. Edgar Hoover, who had a long history since he came to the FBI in the early 1920s or somewhere. He created a surveillance unit that surveilled activist groups that were focused on making significant changes and protecting the rights of the non-status, people who weren't in the status quo, mainly non-whites and that. And so he then in the 60s, I believe, created what is now called COINTELPRO, or what was then called COINTELPRO. It doesn't, in quotes, officially exist now. But it was the counterintelligence program in which he targeted groups of color, Native Americans, blacks, others, and he specifically did target the Black Panthers. He targeted environmentalists. He targeted Dr. Martin Luther King, as you pointed out. And these were the Senate. There was a Senate review of this, special hearings on this in the mid-70s, and they basically said that the program was for the purposes of protecting the status quo, and that's my paraphrasing, that he did it consciously to destabilize many organizations that were focused on the rights, for example, in the civil rights movement, the rights of black people. Black Panther were focused on the rights of black people and were actually gaining some ground, in fact, and so he wanted to destabilize them. And they, through COINTELPRO, many of these organizations were infiltrated. We know the story. All of your audience may not know that the Black Panther Party leader in Chicago, Fred Hampton, there's significant evidence that he was actually killed through the FBI's infiltration of his organization. Martin Luther King, as you pointed out, there's significant evidence that through COINTELPRO and Hoover's program, they sent all kinds of messages to Coretta Scott King to try and actually destabilize their marriage. They attempted to say things and do things to have Martin Luther King commit suicide. So it was a destabilization of activist organizations that were about the issues of social and racial justice. I'll let Barbara add anything she'd like to add.
Barbara?
Yes, I mean, well, that's a great description. And I would add that, sadly, COINTELPRO never ended.
Mm-hmm.
For all practical purposes, we have every reason to believe that over the years that there has been just intense and unwarranted surveillance of African-American activists and activism. Of course, what has prompted this new designation of black identity extremists is the new effort centered around police shootings and police, you know, killings of unarmed African-Americans, and African-Americans, even if they were armed, to pose no threat because, you know, they consider, you know, a hammer, and, you know, the equivalent of a gun, apparently. You know, all these crazy cases that we have seen of African-American men and women being shot and killed by police. And when the Black Lives Matter movement took flight and started really getting a lot of national attention and a lot of national support, they came up with this new definition of Black identity extremists. And we know that in the summer of 2017, the FBI sent a notice about this designation to 18,000 law enforcement entities throughout the United States to alert them to this danger. Now, let me go back to COINTELPRO and connect it up again, because what's fascinating about COINTELPRO files that were released last week is that if you go through all the different files, mm-hmm. you'll realize that there's one general file called Black Extremism.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of label is not new. It was a label they were using way back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. It's a label that has is that this is just a new version of it. And what we are intent about is that it's dangerous, because if you're telling law enforcement that if people act a certain way, if they are too active in protesting police, if they are too, quote, Black identified, I can't believe that one, if they care too much about Black issues, if they speak up too much about inequities in society, or if they're asking people to get involved in activities that they're dangerous and therefore a threat to law enforcement, that means that people are going to be moved on. They're going to be, you know, surveilled and followed in their actions, and motives and activities are going to be interpreted as being dangerous.
Right.
And when you have that kind of mentality, that means people are going to get hurt. And so it's a very dangerous label, and it's too overbroad. Just think about it, Black identity extremists. What in the world is that? And the way they define it is so overbroad. It's anybody who cares too much about Black people, who are, quote, obsessed with Black issues, obsessed with Black justice. Come on. Since when is that some kind of evil? It is actually, it's the basis for most of the justice warriors and fighters we've had in our, you know, in our past. So it's a very dangerous label.
Yeah, but let me just quickly say another word about COINTELPRO before bringing Audra back to bring further clarification to the current danger. Because essentially, the reason I wanted to, I called it part two, because I had a sense that COINTELPRO has never been dead. It's just a new iteration, so forth and so on. But one of the things that our audience should be aware of is that J. Edgar Hoover also specifically talked about the fear of the rise of, I think it was called, quote, a Black Messiah.
Right, right.
And was not clear whether they were talking about Malcolm or Martin or both. But many people believe that it was for this reason that both of them actually ended up being assassinated under very, very suspicious circumstances. And I guess the other thing that you just touched on, Barbara, which is I think is very powerful, is the reality that throughout much of history, actually, and particularly in this period, the period of Black Power and so forth and so on, you know, it was really other groups were really looking to Black people. You know, even the Gray Panthers, you had Black Panthers that were looking to Black people. It has been the, quote, Black activism and Black extremism that has really in some ways posed a fundamental challenge to that status quo, which J. Edgar Hoover was fearful, and others, I'm sure, might be toppled. So, Adjua, this, and let me just say this, the other reason I was interested in this, at the State of the Black World Conference in Newark in 2016, we had a cross-generational panel. And it included some members of Black Lives Matter and some other organizations, for that matter, Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle out of Baltimore and others. And they specifically were concerned about this. And they wanted to know how did they were already feeling that pressure, and they wanted to know, how did we, meaning our generation, sort of cope with this and deal with this? Because they were already feeling the pressure because of all the activism that was literally exploding onto the scene as a result of Black Lives Matter, movement for Black Lives, and whatever. So, Ajua, where are we in relationship? I think Barbara has described it. You may certainly add more detail, but you were raising it for a reason. Is there action steps? Are we taking steps? Are you taking steps, you and Barbara, to address this in a way that would get more people aware of it and could put us on a path where we're countering it in a way that maybe we weren't able to do as effectively as we should have in the past?
Yes, very much so. One of the reasons we reached out to you and others to be on the radio and to talk about this is that we have, through the National Council of Black Lawyers board meeting in April of 2018, we developed, Barbara was there, a number of other people were there, and together we've developed a collective that is focused on the Black Identity Extremist designation or assessment of the FBI, and the goal is to educate people about it and to attempt to abolish, but we always know, we know actually the FBI is going to always probably watch us as long as we have this type of government and focus of the government, which we've had since it was created. I don't want people to think this is new. But we do want to at least get them to take the assessment back, not to recognize, to have our communities raise enough noise about it and that they have to go undercover, so to speak. And I'm being quite candid because I'm not sure we will ever really abolish this government's police arms surveillance of us totally. What we are doing as a collective, and part the collective includes the National Conference of Black Lawyers, Barbara's organization, Transformative Justice Coalition. We have National Lawyers Guild. We have Stop Police Spying out of L.A. and a couple of other organizations are part of it, as well as some individuals. And what we're doing is, for example, this Saturday, we're hosting a forum, a conference in D.C. That we would encourage any of your listeners who want to get to D.C. or may already be in D.C., because I believe you can get your radio program online, they come. It's June 8th at University of the District of Columbia Law School on Connecticut Avenue, the Moot Courtroom, for 2 to 4. And in that, we are not just educating. We want to develop strategies. So we're spending the first session of about 40 minutes just giving the background. COINTELPRO will be presented by Nkechi Taifa. Barbara will present on Black Identity Extremism, and we have a sister named Fatima who is with the Muslim Justice League who will present on the Counter Violence Extremism, which is a program that basically started under President Obama that targets Muslim activists. And so we want to strategize. We want to engage people, number one, not only let them know, but engage them. And what do we do? How do we spot this in our communities? How do we raise the alarm? How do we protect our activists as we move forward? And so that's primarily what we're doing at this point.
Now, is there a couple of other questions? Is there a number, a email, a place that people who are listening to the program can actually contact the coalition in order to get information or to join or to give suggestions? Is that's one of the organizer questions that we have to get out?
Exactly. Before. We have a website, which is www.bieac.wordpress.com.
Okay, do that again.
Okay, I'm going to pull this document up because I'm not really good. Okay, it's www.bieac.wordpress.com.
Okay. All right, and that's how people can
they can touch base with us there. We have all information about the the meeting, the conference, but we also have information on how they can contact us and get involved.
Now, Barbara, of course, we have the orange man in the White House now, so it's, you know. It's,
oh, my
really,
goodness.
It's difficult because you and many others were, it was, and that kind of shows because we have people who, you know, don't think voting's important, and if the revolution is not televised tomorrow, it's irrelevant. I'm being somewhat facetious, but there's some who almost are at that position. But under the previous administration, for whatever the shortcomings of the Obama administration were, and there were some, you just noted, for example, that he a program targeting Muslims was under his administration, which one people might find shocking. But access to the Attorney General, Eric Holder, was one of the things, Barbara, that you and Ajwa and others were able to do. You were able to actually go and talk to him and talk about the census and talk about the Voting Rights Act and various other things. And I'm just wondering, even though it might be symbolic to some degree, is there thought as a part of the strategy of actually organizing and mobilizing the Civil Rights Human Rights Commission community to actually request a meeting with the Attorney General?
We need to, Ron. The Congressional Black Caucus members such as Karen Bass, Hakeem Jeffries, and others have been pretty outspoken about this and have demanded that the FBI Director Christopher Wray, account for his actions and, have really, demanded that something be done to get rid of this classification. And in fact, there's a report that at a recent meeting, the FBI kind of backhanded some reference to the black identity extremist category and said that it was no longer effective. We don't believe that because there's been no such announcement, right? And so that seemed like that was a purposeful dodge. But what I want people to understand is that this has real impact. We know that they are actually, Ron, going out and meeting with black ministers. In meetings and asking black ministers and members of churches to identify people in their congregation who they believe meet this definition and to report them to the FBI. Mm. So if you're sitting back and you're thinking, I haven't been at a protest, I just say some stuff on Twitter or whatever, or, I might talk to my friends. You have no idea. You could be targeted. And that's wrong because we all have our First Amendment right to express ourselves.
Right.
And I also want to point out that a number of people have been detained under this identification. Mm-hmm. We don't know how many because they are not forthcoming. They have defied every FOIA request. And when I say they, I mean the FBI. Has defied every FOIA request from the ACLU, who just recently sued them because of this, from NCBL, from any group that has said, tell us, who are you, who is under surveillance and who have you detained? And they have responded very cynically with answers like, well, you tell us who you think we detained. So it's been, a very ugly process. And I just want people to understand that we're raising the alarm, we're sounding the alarm, because this is dangerous to our community. We really don't want to see anyone harmed as a result of this, although lives have already been harmed, such as Christopher Daniels, who they detained for what, Audra, 6 months?
He was detained from December to May, and when the court ordered him released, dismissed the charges, he had already lost his job and his apartment, and he was living with his 15-year-old when they came in the middle of the night and threw them both out into the street.
Right. Well, we're about out of time, or we are out of time. I guess the last thing, because I have next to no confidence that this administration will respond. But one of the things that is happening is that many of these candidates, presidential candidates, are campaigning on criminal justice reform. So it would seem also that one of the things that would be very important, and some of them could use some help, frankly, polishing up their credentials. I won't name them, but maybe they could redeem themselves by at least a pledge that once elected, that indeed this black identity extremism category, which is totally dangerous, would be repealed. So I'm hoping that that's a part of the strategy as well.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely. And that's we have to do the whole gamut across the political arena. You're right.
And finally, Audra, just one more time, how people can be in touch. Give that website out again.
Yeah, people can go to the website. It's BIEAC.wordpress.com. We urge you to look at it, to get in touch with us. And if you can, come to the program on June 8th from 2 to 4. That's this Saturday.
All right. And Barbara Arnwine, quickly, you have a radio show called Igniting Change. And just give us I'll allow you a quick plug about your program, too, because I've had the privilege
yes.
of being on
my show is
Igniting
on
Change.
Every Tuesday from 12 until 1. It's on WOL, DC News. But you can also find me anywhere in the world, anywhere in the nation, at BarbaraArnwine.com. www.barbaraarnwine.com. And
okay.
I really, really appreciate your putting this word out for us. Thank you so much, Ron.
Well, I got
Thank
no choice.
Thank
I,
you,
want,
Ron.
I want to remain in the movement. And when y'all say move, I got to move. I have no choice.
That's right. Well, that's thank you right. for your support always, Ron.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Right. Again, a very, very important discussion, black identity extremism. COINTELPRO Part 2 is here. COINTELPRO never went away, and so we have to ever be vigilant. We're going to take a break here, come back, and a little comments, and also we're going to invite you to join us. We haven't had our audience weigh in for a while, so you'll have that opportunity for about 15, 20 minutes after we take this brief pause. You're listening to Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders of The Laura Flanders Show. The Left Forum is right around the corner, and they have generously donated weekend passes to WBAI listener supporters who make a $50 pledge in support of WBAI. I've had the pleasure of hosting many panels and plenaries at The Left Forum over the years, and I'm doing it again this time. I'll be hosting the Saturday plenary on the 50th anniversary of Stonewall and a session with Chris Hedges and Rick Wolf on Lennon. So come meet me, Laura Flanders, and the others at the 2019 Left Forum and be part of a conversation about radically imagining and building a different future. Make a pledge of $50 today and lock in your free weekend pass to the Left Forum, taking place in Brooklyn June 28th through June 30th. That's the 28th through the 30th in Brooklyn. Go to give, then the numeral 2, WBAI.org. That's give to WBAI.org and search Left Forum. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. See you at the Left Forum.
Okay, we're back. And, COINTELPRO is still alive and well, unfortunately. And then the Orange Man, it's like on steroids. We have got to get rid of the Orange Man and this administration. I don't care what nobody says. That's my position, but, others can have their opinions, too, and that's why we have, this opportunity here on WBAI for people to express themselves. I just want to quickly talk about a couple of things. First of all, I am going to be at the invitation of Sheila Trainum, Reverend Sheila Trainum, brilliant educator, but also a ordained minister with the Clark House, actually doing work there. I'm going to be at the Clark House this coming Saturday, and I do so much enjoy seeing our listeners as we make these announcements and actually see folks. So this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock p.m. sharp at the Clark House. Clark House is located, the John Henry Clark House, that is, at 286 Condon Avenue, between 141st and 142nd Avenues, or yeah, I guess it's Avenues. I'll be there discussing gentrification. We talked about that here. Reparations and the 2020 elections. A conversation with Dr. Ron Daniels. That'll be this coming Saturday. Take note of it if you'd like to come. It's open to the public and free. That's this coming Saturday, May 3 o'clock p.m. at the John Henry Clark House. What an incredible achievement that was. People like Leonard Jeffries and others, Dr. J and others, and Susan Taylor stepping up big time, and Regent Dr. Adlai Stanford to create a monument in the memory of John Henry Clark, not just to have it sitting there as a building. They have these conversations all the time at the John Henry Clark House, and I am privileged to be the person who's going to be speaking or having a conversation this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock p.m., John Henry Clark House, 286 Convent Avenue, between 141st and 142nd Avenue. Many of you know where it is, but we'd love to see you come and say, hey, heard it on WBAI. It's always good to do that. Just a couple of other notes I'd like to just lay out for your consideration. One is, I don't know how you feel about this, but it's the normalization of some of the most abhorrent behavior that one might imagine in relationship to a president of the United States. And I just keep thinking about if President Barack Obama, for whatever his weaknesses were and his warts and knots were, but any one of the insults and outrageous behavioral machinations and madness that is perpetrated by the orange man, daily, he would have been impeachment. He would have been ran out of the White House, long gone. And yet it's almost like it's become, oh, here comes another one, and another one, and another one. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about that. A couple of other topics that are on my mind is your thoughts about this black identity extremism. You know, what must be done about that? And have you been affected by it? You know, right here in the city of New York, I know that there was a program to infiltrate Muslim mosques and actually do just what was talked about, so people could snitch, you know, or try to get people to snitch. And it was really intrusive with FBI collaborating and the FBI, CIA, and the new NYPD. And a couple of other topics that are quite different but are on very much in the news. The legalization of marijuana in the state of New York and New Jersey hasn't been done. Should it have been done? If so, why? If not, why not? And another one, just popping onto the news now, the decriminalization of sex work. These are all topics that you might want to talk about. But frankly, you can talk about whatever you choose to talk about. Give us a call, if you will, at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877 here on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, Dr. Daniels. Thank you so much for taking my call. You're talking about this spying thing that's going on. And I've often wondered, because I had a business in Upper Manhattan, and I used to feed Occupy Wall Street almost every night. And a couple of things happened to me that were really outrageous. Number one, my bank accounts all of a sudden were shut down, were closed, unbeknownst to me, and for no reason. I had no arrears. I do not owe child support or any financial issues. And I came to find out that because of my status being Cuban, that they had flagged me. That's what the bank said. It's the only time in my life that it's ever happened. And I was raised in this country. So I've been Cuban for a long, 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 long time. And most recently, I live in Jersey City. Most recently, I've had an unfortunate situation where the police was called, and I have been falsely arrested. And when I've tried to get to the bottom of this, literally falsely arrested, I was detained, and I have a letter from the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office in Jersey City that says that there is no arrest record. Yet I'm still embroiled in this battle, and I've often wondered if I'm on some kind of watch list and how can I gain that information to make sure, because now two big events have happened in my life, which I'm paying the price for. And the only thing that I can narrow it down to was my involvement with Occupy Wall Street.
Well, the two organizations that I would immediately, there may be several, but two organizations I would immediately, three actually. One is, and you can just Google them, is the New York Lawyers Guild.
The New York
Lawyers Guild is one. The other is the New York chapter of the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. And the third one would be the Center for Constitutional Rights, where I previously served as executive director. Any of those three organizations or all of them may be able to be helpful. And I do know that at one point, I know CCR was particularly aggressive in dealing with this issue because there were certain ordinances that had been passed that were supposed to prevent the surveillance of demonstrations, and the New York Police Department was actually violating those prohibitions in the most recent wave of demonstrations. You're not supposed to be out there photographing, filming people in demonstrations and so forth. So I got to move on. I got to move on to other callers, but those are the three organizations that if you have not already contacted them, I would. New York Lawyers, the National Lawyers Guild, New York Chapter, Center for Constitutional Rights, or the New York Chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union. So thanks much. Really appreciate your call. Others can call us at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877 for audience to we have an open forum in effect. I've talked about some of the issues that are near and dear to me, but again, I'm just happy to be able to just interface with the audience and chat and talk about those issues that are out there. And there are so many. There's just so many things happening, not the least of which, you know, there's a refusal in this country to deal with gun control. You know, and you know, it's to the point now where every week, something is happening. Some mass shooting is taking place. I don't hear this coming from France or Italy or Germany, India, anywhere in the world. Do you hear just, you know, turn around? It's almost like, another one. It's another shooting is taking place. There's something going on here, too. Not only is the question of gun control, there's something about the nature of a society. It's not just physical violence. It's the psychological assault on people, on working people, on people who have gone off to fighting these wars and come back and have not been sufficiently reincorporated. First of all, the wars are madness in the first place, but then sending people off the war and then coming back and then having post-traumatic syndrome and not be untreated, and then not having an infrastructure of mental health facilities, and then people talking about, oh, well, we should deal with mental health. I mean, this is a gun-crazy nation. Most recently, I guess it was in New Zealand, there was one of these rare, it was rare. Man, they jumped on that so fast. They start changing laws and said, we ain't letting this happen no more. And yet guns are just everywhere in the society, everywhere. And there seems to be no way of stopping it. I understand we have callers. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi. Blessed love, Dr. Daniels. Thanks for your great service. Hotep.
Thank you, Hotep.
I just want to commend you on the topic, and I just want to propose a legislation that was signed into law by President Trump. It's called H.R. 1242. It became the public law 115-102, commemorating the 400th year. They claim the word arrival in the legislation of the African people under the British colonial rule. But in terms of the COINTELPRO discussion, I am looking at our Constitution as to the 13th Amendment and the clause that permits the state to have its arm continuing the pre-1865 December 6th classification of slavery. So I don't know how that plays with the state having control over the humans after 1865, instead of when European and even Africans used to own other people. So I am, you know, looking at how the constitutions have us in the position that we are still in. And the last point is, should we be building a black house since the construct said there's a white house? Although I'm not about race, but if there's a white house, I think we need to balance it out with a black house.
Well, I agree with the last idea. We need to build black houses, and those black houses need to be strong black institutions that are righteous.
Yes,
institutions that we need to build. Thank you much. Really appreciate your call. Let me just say that, yes, this is the 400th year of the arrival of the first indentured Africans in Jamestown. And there's lots of commemorations going on about that. And, of course, one of which you've heard about here on WBAI by way of the effort being led by Reverend Dennis Dillon and his wife and partner, Dr. Zinzili Dillon, the Door of Our Return 2020 initiative. You can Google that and figure out how you might want to relate to it. I'm sure we're going to have more information about that. The 13th Amendment is one of the clause which says that the slaves were, in fact, emancipated except in the instance of activities related to incarceration. Is something that we seek to get eradicated through reparations. That one of the things that one of the pillars of the 10-point program of the National African American Reparations Commission is a criminal justice plank, and it deals with eradicating that. It is really more a psychological, symbolic thing than anything else. It is not that, in fact, states have to keep people in slavery and in servitude unless they, you know, unless, you know, it's but it's offensive. It ought to be eradicated. And therefore, we really want to move to do that. So I hope I've addressed most of the issues that our previous caller raised. Others can call at 212-209-2877, 219-212-209-2877. And again, just reminding people, I will be at Clark House this coming Saturday, 3 o'clock p.m. I'll give the address out again after we take a couple more callers. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, how you doing? Am I talking to you, Doc?
Yeah, you are. Yes, you are, sir.
Oh, yeah, I love you, man. You're such a positive brother. Well, I would tell you, you know, it doesn't really matter what you do. If you stop on the streets and promote, if you stop and talk to our children and say, hey, you know, you don't have to do that. You don't have to live like that. Or if you promote health and healing, whatever you do that's productive in our community is looked at as a threat across the board.
Well, I think there are some things that are seen that way more than others. I think to the degree that there is organizing that addresses issues related to our treatment and
right.
And the organizing protest, the organizing and agitating, particularly as it relates to issues of the criminal justice system. And in this instance, dealing with the police. You know, and there's this effort reflexively somehow to try to protect the police. And nobody, certainly I would not indict all police for being negative and bad, but there is a percentage of them that are, and unfortunately
that should
there
be prosecuted like anyone else.
And there's a group of other people who are inside the police department who become complicitous because they will not report those who are doing bad things.
See, exactly.
They get a case of the blue flu, and that becomes a real problem. And the reality is that they're just far. One is too many. But we have still an epidemic of black people who are killed by the police under circumstances where it should not happen. And let me just throw another controversial piece in here. And I'm not condoning violence by any stretch of the imagination.
No,
but
sir.
Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson sent out a piece, and Earl O'Farrell Hutchinson has something called a Hutchinson Report on our sister station in Los Angeles. And he said, I can tell you how the shooter in this most recent horrific attack that took place, and it was horrible. He said, I can tell you why he was black. And he answered, because he got killed. And what he was saying is, if you recently, there have been a couple of instances where you've had mass shootings and the people who were white lived to tell about it. They were apprehended.
Absolutely.
And again, please understand me. I am not condoning violence in any stretch of the imagination. But it's interesting that if you're black and you're involved in these things, you almost certainly are going to die. And it's been... I wish somebody would even just begin to take a tabulation of this, what's been happening, because it's interesting in many instances, not all, because I can remember a couple of cases where white officers actually approached a black offender and actually de-escalated. But more often than not, there is this fear of black people to the degree that if you are caught or felt that you're
suspected
about,
of anything,
you are going to die. And
they pulled me over on Route 1, 1 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm telling them, listen, I'm a bus driver. Like, and they searched my whole car. I'm standing out there, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's so ridiculous. And I had herbs with me, and they thought it was drugs. And I was like, well, no, this is good for high blood pressure. This is good for that. So I had to, you know, I had to control the situation.
Right.
Not to let, you know, the situation control me. But what I was really wanted to get.
Well, I got to really move on because I got very narrow amount of time. And I took your question to address some other issues. I got a couple other callers I want to squeeze, and I only got 2 or 3 minutes left. So thank you. Appreciate your call. One last caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Hello? I thought we had one more caller. Guess not.
Okay. They must have hung up.
Okay. All right. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left in any event. But these are all interesting topics. And, of course, they provide an opportunity to engage other subjects as well. But once again, we just want to share with people that I will be at the Clark House on this coming Saturday and to discuss, who knows, any other topics. It's a conversation, but specifically talking about gentrification, which we talked about here. It was WBAI, which carried the Gentrification Summit live. It was all the way live and strong. Reparations is a topic that has been covered here on WBAI, and there's more to come. In fact, I'll have an important announcement next week about that. And we're also going to talk about the 2020 election at Clark House. And again, Clark House is located at 286 Convent Avenue, and that's between 141st Street and 142nd. Also, become a WBAI buddy. We urge you. I do know that there's a major, major effort. We all are aware that it's a major effort to try to reduce the number of pledge drives that take place. Because we'd rather just do programming, you know, and not have to do as much. But we can't do that now. You are critically important. This is community listener-sponsored radio. There are no corporate donors, and if there were, we wouldn't accept them because they almost all of them have something about them that we are dubious about. No foundations are coming forward and that kind of stuff. You are, and we are, as the listeners, as the community, the funders that we've been looking for. And so that's why we have the pledge drives. And by the way, I must say, the pledge drives are also informative. Some of the most amazing premiums are out there that you get and useful tools. So it's not just that we ask. There's also a gift that goes with it. But the real gift is WBAI. And if there were no premiums, we would still want, and it would be urgently important that you support WBAI. So become a WBAI buddy. I keep pushing it hard, and every week I try to remind people that you, for at least for a minimum of $10 a month, $120 a year, you can become a sustaining member. You can become a WBAI buddy. It's $120 a year. You can do more. I am a WBAI buddy. I say that not to be boasting, but simply to say that I don't ask people to go where I'm not prepared to lead, and I do by becoming a WBAI buddy, and have been one for a long time. So go to give to WBAI today. You've heard it. You enjoy the show. You enjoy WBAI. Go to give to WBAI today and become a sustaining member. Well, that wraps up our show for today, but we're Going to be back next week here on Vantage Point, 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. This is the professor signing off, saying we'll see you next week.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.